Welcome to this week's Liverpool Live podcast. I'm Sinead Munro and I will be discussing the main news stories in Liverpool, as well as a roundup of the sports headlines and what's happening in the city this week. Coming up, a charity is encouraging people in Liverpool to think about adopting siblings together.
We are hoping that National Adoption Week is going to get people thinking, can I give a loving, stable home to children who need it? And most importantly, we want to keep brothers and sisters together.
Also, we'll be finding out why Green Party councillor Tom Crone doesn't feel safe cycling in Liverpool city centre.
There is clearly a problem here in Liverpool. I don't think there are enough cycle lanes, and I don't think there is enough of a cycling culture which makes cyclists feel safe.
As well as that, we'll be hearing from the public of whether they think parents should be fined for taking their children out of school during term time. Merseyside Fire Services have been on strike following the government's plans to increase the firefighter to retirement age from 55 to 60 and force them to make larger pension contributions. Hannah Kane is with me in the studio to give me more details on the story. So Hannah, tell me a little bit more about the situation and what's been happening.
Well, Shanine, the fire services have been participating in 4 days of industrial action. The strike continued until 6 p.m. on the 4th of November, with the strikers returning to work on Wednesday before bonfire night.
By Monday afternoon, there were 89 call-outs. Who dealt with them?
Well, I spoke to Mark Rowe, the secretary of the Fire Brigade Union, earlier this week, and he told me that there were people dealing with the call-outs, but no members of the Fire Brigade Union dealt with any of them.
There are people who are not part of the Fire Brigade who are providing a much-reduced service on Merseyside, and they're the ones that are answering the calls. Fire Brigade Union members haven't answered any of those calls.
How do they feel about the retirement age increase and the changes to their pension?
Well, the FBU aren't happy at all, and after putting off the strike for 8 weeks originally, they felt they had no choice but to take further industrial action. Members of the Merseyside FBU are angry because they feel the government have given offers to other fire services across the country.
The government knew the timescales, and what the government have said is they keep cutting it back, and each week, any more than the Fire Minister got in touch with the Fire Brigade Union and said, well, we're nearly finished on this improved offer. We're just fine-tuning it. We need another week because it's going up in surgery. And they put it back and put it back and put it back. So what we're saying is why are firefighters in England valued less by the Westminster government than the devolved governments value their firefighters in Wales, Northern Ireland, Scotland, if they offer? Well, you tell us what the difference is between a firefighter in Wales, Northern Ireland, Scotland and England, because clearly they're valued more than the Westminster government values its firefighters. I turn that right back onto David Cameron and Westminster, because clearly, you know, it is the government of Westminster that are putting the public of Merseyside in danger. It is without doubt David Cameron who is endangering the public of Merseyside, and he seems to have turned his back on Merseyside public, and I think the reason for that is because there are no Conservative votes.
Is it realistic to put the age up to 60?
The union say it's not realistic to have 60-year-old firefighters working because of the health and fitness issues and because they won't reach their pension age. The Williams Review found that 75% of firefighters won't be able to reach the age of 60. So their argument is that it's the government's own review, and now they are in fact going against what it said.
When people reach the age of 55, 56... they'll never achieve their pension because that's clearly unfair. Now, we have to pass each year a yearly medical, and it's quite a strict and stringent medical. One of the reviews that the government undertook was for Professor Williams, and it was clearly referred to as the Williams Review. Now, that was the government's own review. And what the Williams Review found, that currently firefighters employed, 75% of us won't actually be able to reach the age of 60 past 50. Significantly worse for female firefighters. Williams Review actually says that 85% of female firefighters currently employed wouldn't be able to reach the age of 60. So that's clearly unfair.
The union still aren't happy, which may mean more industrial action in the near future, which is slightly worrying with Christmas and New Year coming up.
Thank you, Hannah. More than 130 entire apartments measuring just 25 metres will be built in an empty office block on Moorfields. In that space will be a living room, bedroom, bathroom and kitchen. Our reporter Jake Cottrell has more on the story.
The project was recommended for approval, with officers saying it would help boost the number of people moving into the city centre. There has, however, been some criticism of the plans. I spoke to Liberal Democrat leader Richard Kemp, who voted against the application. He says the apartments are too small.
I thought that the proposed housing development was absolutely quite disgraceful. They claim that they, and I'm sure they do, keep to the council's minimum of 25 square metres. But 25 square metres for an entire apartment for sale is the same size as one big room. And yet people are supposed to get their first steps on the home ownership ladder by this method. And I think they're far too small. I think it will be inappropriately overcrowded as a building. And I think the council should have rejected anything of this type.
As well as issues with the size of the apartments, there have also been questions raised about whether small city centre accommodation that could appeal to students and first-time buyers is undermining other parts of the city. Councillor Kemp says there's not enough appropriate accommodation for families wanting to live in Liverpool.
What we're clearly seeing is that in parts of Liverpool 3, 1, 15, 7, places like that, people who, like me, when they first got married, bought a two-up, two-down, which, interestingly, is 50 square metres, or twice the size of these apartments, are now choosing either to go into the city centre or to just leave the city. The fact is, we're not building the appropriate accommodation for children with families. And the more we create these micro-apartments, the more likely it is that we will drive families out because we'll leave nowhere for them to actually live.
According to the planning report, buildings like the one above the entrance to Moorfield Station that's being turned into microflats are prime residential sites and planning will go ahead despite the concerns.
Merseyside schools have seen unauthorised absences soar by nearly 40%, with children in Knowsley taking more time off than anywhere else, according to Knowsley Council. We took to the streets of Liverpool to see what the public thought about parents being fined for taking their children out of school during term time.
I think it's really difficult. I've got children at school and I've never been tempted, but I can see why they are, because if you can't afford the massive cost of going on holiday in August, and I can see why parents do.
The teachers always say, if they're not there, you can't teach them anything, so
don't believe in it. For the simple reason, there's people that can't afford holidays.
I think if it gets to the point where you're just taking someone out for a day for a wedding or something, and I think it's probably a bit unfair that the teachers aren't allowed to take time off for similar things. Begs the question, why should everything be so expensive in term holidays as well? Because if you do want to take your kids on holiday, then it is very expensive.
George Osborne has agreed to deal with Greater Manchester's 10 council leaders for the city to have. The move agreed with leaders of the region's 10 councils will give local politicians greater control over billions of pounds of public money. The mayor will oversee policies such as transport, social care, housing, as well as police budgets. Reporter Beth Antolli and our correspondent Eleanor Finn discussed how these changes will affect Liverpool.
How do you think the introduction of an elected mayor in Manchester will affect the city of Liverpool?
Well, I think it's important to acknowledge that this is a great turning point for Manchester, especially since the people of the city voted against the idea 2 years previous. However, for Liverpool, a much smaller city, I think it's fair to say that they're almost being left behind in this economical development. You know, with the talks that Sheffield and Leeds will eventually link up with Manchester too, where does this leave Liverpool?
So with Joe Anderson, it has commented on the announcement saying whatever Manchester are giving back to the region with this plan is nothing compared to what they're taking away.
Giving Manchester this much power is a big step, but it's only the first step. Could work really well for the city. But as for whether other cities should follow in their footsteps, it's hard to say. After all, a similar combined authority introduced in Merseyside has not gone as smoothly as originally predicted.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
anti-ISIS group are setting up a charity to raise awareness of the suffering of Liverpool's Kurdish community. Our reporter Camille Nurani spoke to Liverpool John Moores University student Oscar Soyu, who told us more about the group and their future plans.
The main goal here is the people that are suffering, you know, to raise awareness for what's going on. Because I genuinely believe that the British people are not fully aware of what's going on. You know, many people out there don't have food to eat, they don't have clothes, shelters are very limited. People have been made homeless, you know, people have been killed, but there are people out there that are suffering now as a result of what's happened. It is a tragic thing that's happened, it is. And I think more people need to understand what is actually happening.
Do you think you're getting your aim out there? Do you think that protest?
I don't think 100%, because there is a few things, but I think people understand the main aim, which is our fight against ISIS. I think people understand that. But within that aim, we have to think about our people, you know, and how they are suffering, you know, and how we can help them. There are a few other things that we are trying to do outside the protest. The people in Kurdistan, they need clothes. We have got several locations yet to be 100% confirmed, but several locations which we are trying to put clothes banks at. We are trying to arrange a fundraiser, a music event.
Rural Olympian Chris Broadman has revealed he would not let his children cycle on roads because it's too dangerous. The gold medal cyclist believes more needs to be invested so more people will cycle. He thinks cycling could be a solution to the congestion, pollution and health problems facing the UK. Many countries in Europe, including Germany, France, Holland, have all invested heavily in cycling to tackle these problems. Green Party Councillor Tom Crone told us Liverpool has to improve safety measures for cyclists.
Liverpool has got like some of the highest rates of injuries and deaths for cyclists and pedestrians on the roads. So there is clearly a problem here in Liverpool. I don't think there are enough cycle lanes, and I don't think there is enough of a cycling culture which makes cyclists feel safe. I feel reasonably safe, especially around where I live, cycling to see friends and do things locally. But I admit, when I go into town, sometimes I find myself on roads, and it does feel like quite dangerous, I must admit, because in much of the city centre there's several lanes of car traffic and absolutely nothing provided for cyclists. Take the Strand, for example, it's like six lanes of traffic there, and there's really nothing for cyclists. So, yeah, the roads aren't safe enough, and there's not enough space given to cycling, and I strongly support more space being devoted to cyclists to promote it in the city and make it much safer. Whether I agree with Chris Broadman that I wouldn't let my kids cycle, I think I probably would, but not until I'm sure they've got the hang of the roads.
As part of National Adoption Week, the British Association for Adoption and Fostering Charity is focusing on siblings to encourage more people to come forward who can adopt brothers and sisters together. Although adoption is on the increase, there is still 68,840 children in the care of local authorities across the UK. Our reporter Ruby Molyneux spoke to Rachel Walker from the Adoption Matters North West, who says this is important to children.
There has been an increase in adoption over the last year, which we're really pleased about. It means more children are getting placed quicker with permanent families. However, nationally there's always a shortfall in the amount of adopters needed, so there's currently around 6,000 children waiting to be adopted across the UK, and there is never going to be enough adopters to meet that if we're at the current rate.
Why is there a call for more siblings to be together? Are they usually separated?
It does occasionally happen that siblings are separated where that's in the best needs of the children. However, the call this week is because nearly half of the children who are waiting to be adopted are part of sibling groups. And if we don't get adopters to come forward who will consider that sibling group, then they will stay in the foster care system for far longer until they may or may not find a family. And unfortunately, the larger the sibling group, statistically, the longer they're going to be waiting in foster care, waiting for a family who can take them on.
There's different myths about adoption.
Yeah.
What about couples who are older that want to adopt, whether they've had a family and their kids have moved out and they've grown up? Are they allowed to adopt if they're older?
They are, and sometimes they make some of the best adopters because they've got a great deal of experience. and they've got the time that they can devote to an adoptive family. In fact, there's no upper age limit at all to adoption, provided that you're healthy and you're able to keep up with the children. As long as you're over 21, anyone can apply to adopt.
And what about single parents? Are they able to adopt?
Yeah, absolutely. Single parents, single men, single ladies. If you're a same-sex couple, you don't have to be married, you don't have to be a homeowner, you don't have to be particularly rich, you don't have to be in full-time employment. None of those things are necessary in order to adopt.
There has been a lot of... there can be a stigma with same-sex couples adopting and things like that. Do you think that has been... that people are over that now and it's okay?
I think a lot of people are over it. I mean, the law is quite clear that nobody can discriminate on the grounds of gender or sexuality or race or faith or any of those things. And of course we don't discriminate as we shouldn't, because the fact is that same-sex couples and single gay adopters make fantastic parents. I always say children come in different shapes and sizes, and so do families, and our job is to help find the best fit and to keep that fit secure.
And what are you hoping that National Adoption Week, do you hope that will raise awareness throughout the city?
We are hoping that National Adoption Week is going to get people thinking, can I give a loving, stable home to children who need it? And most importantly, we want to keep brothers and sisters together. Sometimes that's the only stable relationship they've had during their entire life. So it would, you know, it's so important for those children to be able to stay with someone that they know and that they can rely on. And so, you know, we'd really like to be able to keep as many sibling groups together as possible.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
Here are our latest sports headlines with Luke Holliday.
Liverpool manager Brendan Rodgers stood by his decision to pick a much-changed team for their Champions League defeat at Real Madrid. They lost 1-0 to the European title holders. Rodgers dropped captain Steven Gerrard and Raheem Sterling in two of seven changes to the side, which lost to Newcastle in the Premier League on Saturday. Liverpool faced Chelsea this weekend, and manager Jose Mourinho has had his own say on Rodgers' team selection. Mourinho said he always plays his best team against the most difficult opponent. The Portuguese manager will take his Chelsea team to Anfield, hoping for a repeat of last season's fixture, which saw Chelsea leave with all 3 points in a 2-0 victory. Everton returned to Europa League action this week with a home tie against the French outfit Lille at Goodison Park. Everton top Group H, but will be looking for a return to winning ways after two consecutive draws away from home in the competition. The England squad for their Euro 2016 qualifier with Slovenia and a friendly against Scotland this month has been announced, and there's a surprise inclusion of West Brom forward Saido Berahino, who will make his England debut should he play. Everton defenders Leighton Baines and Phil Jagielka are included in the squad, whilst Ross Barkley goes straight back in after missing the start of the season through injury. Liverpool midfielders Jordan Henderson, Adam Lallana and Raheem Sterling all retain their places, with Ricky Lambert completing the Liverpool contingent in the squad. Former England goalkeeper David James is to auction off hundreds of items. The ex-Liverpool, Portsmouth and Manchester City player was declared bankrupt in May. Most of the items up for sale are signed shirts and footballs, but there's also a Vauxhall Astra and some rally chopper bikes, as well as DJ equipment. Finally, this week sees Warrington Town play the biggest game in the club's history as they face League Two side Exeter City in the first round of the FA Cup at Cantilever Park. Everton Football Club have given the Warrington team permission to use their training facilities at Finch Park to prepare for the tie. The match has already been sold out and will be aired live on the BBC, and it promises to be a very special occasion for everyone involved at the club. I'm Luke Holliday, and that's your Sports Roundup for this week.
Now in our What's On Roundup. The Hot Water Comedy Club is hosting a comedy show on Friday the 7th of November with TV talent and professional circuit headliners and undercover stars. MC Paul Smith introduces Adam Rowe and another TBC act. Delisa Chipunda will be headlining. As part of Heritage Open Month, the public will be able to take a tour of Liverpool's historic Old Dock with expert guides at Merseyside Maritime Museum.
Tours are free and booking is now available for next week on Tuesday the 11th of November. Also on Tuesday, Alderhay Children's Hospital Sanitary is holding a concert to reflect on Alderhay during the Great War when it was used as a military hospital. Singers will be singing a cappella as choir conducted by Robert Soles, with Ian Tracy, chamber organ, Cyan Terry, soprano, and members of the Crosby Symphony Orchestra. A World War I film event will be held at FACT on Remembrance Sunday. The 1927 silent film documentary, Battles of the Coronel and Falkland Islands, will be shown, and a new version has been recorded by 24 members of the Royal Marines Band in memory of the 24 members lost. Tony Wainwright, the Secretary of Liverpool Palace Memorial Fund, spoke to us about the importance of Remembrance Sunday.
With the conflicts that were on in Afghanistan and Iraq, it's become more relevant than ever, because young men and women are given their lives in service of the country. So even though it's the centenary of the Great War this year, it's as relevant today as it was then.
A group called Coldplay, formed by Coldplay fans, are doing a live Coldplay tribute on Saturday the 15th at the Arts Club. They'll be showing their accuracy, musicianship and dedication to the music. Tickets are currently on sale. That's the latest news stories from us. This is Liverpool Life Podcast.
This has been the Liverpool Life Podcast, brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.